Good morning, Senator Berglund. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Senator Berglund. Just before we get going here, to orient me a little bit, I see here we're going to do more with authors' presentations. Did you expect or want to continue with some of the, if there were people that wanted to testify today, or what was your goal?
If they really want to, I suppose.
No, I would defer to what you think we need to be doing.
We weren't planning on it. We were going to have discussion and questions, and at some point, any minute now, the staff will be here with the spreadsheet, and we can go through the spreadsheet, and then we would have the appropriation amendments.
The fiscal note?
Well, the spreadsheet is a compilation of the fiscal notes, and it's a little easier to understand it than going through each and every individual fiscal note. And I can just say this, that we don't quite have all the fiscal notes. We have almost all the fiscal notes that would affect the healthcare access fund. And so there's, I think, one item or so that we're just making a guesstimate to plug a number in, so we are tracking something, and we will make adjustments in those numbers as we do get the final fiscal notes. We also have not gotten a formal fiscal note yet on the 125 impact, but that does not affect the healthcare access fund. That would be coming out of the out of the savings offset account. So I'm sure everybody's doing the best they can.
Okay, great. Well, then, just for our overview, we've reviewed the bill. Was this an opportunity for us to have this morning further presentation or discussion or answers, questions?
Right. So why don't we just see if there are any more questions?
That'd be great. We'll start with that then. And then may I just ask one more question, Senator Berglund? There is consideration of amendments. Are there further amendments that will be...
I will have an appropriation amendment.
Okay, great.
I don't know if anyone else has any amendments.
Very good. Thank you. So with that, is there anybody that would like to ask questions or start some discussion of the bill of Senate File 3099? Well, this is interesting. Let me just say that I continue to hear, at least as people struggle with understanding the complexity and the implications of this bill. A number of maybe questions that are refined or asking for pretty clear, specific probability outcomes of its application. For example, in the rural part of the state, on hospitals in the rural part of the state, how will the process that's designed for repayment impact areas where there may not be competitors, where there's one practice or one hospital? And my understanding, Senator Berglund, as it's designed, at least in this bill, that lack of specificity is understood. There's a group that's formulated to sort of do further development of specificity. But to whatever level you can, maybe you can talk again about that issue, because
sure,
that continues to sort of seem to come up, and people struggle with that.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to. This is something that we discussed quite a bit in the task force. Senator Rosen was there for some of those discussions, and you know, what will happen when prices become transparent is you will be able to compare your local clinic, your local hospital in a rural community where there's only one, with others in the state that are similarly situated. And that will give you a little bit of an idea of whether they're being price competitive. And then we also need to remember that in this day and age, not everything that's done in the hospital In fact, most of what's done in the hospital is not done on an emergency basis. It's done on a scheduled basis. And so if you're going to be, you know, scheduling to have a hip replacement, and you know when you're going to be doing this, and you look and see where you get the best basket of care for hip replacement in terms of price and quality, you might choose to go somewhere else other than your local hometown hospital. People are doing that now without even having, you know, price and quality information because they just think going somewhere else is better. I mean, sometimes they think, well, I'm going to go to the Mayo Clinic because that has to be the best quality around, you know. And it may be, but then it may be the same as the quality in your own backyard. We just don't know until we have more transparency. And the hospitals and the clinics will know that while they have somewhat of a captive audience, they don't have a total captive audience. And so being competitive, being efficient, being a high-quality provider is still going to be important in the rural areas as well.
So, you know, that's interesting what you're saying, because if I think about school districts sort of trying to take a look at how they're meeting performance objectives, that they may not have a competitor, so to speak, but they can, if we have performance outcomes, take a look at other school districts of similar size and similar demographics and check themselves against that, and then learn the best practices maybe from a similar size practice or a similar. So that's where you can begin to, at least, even
right,
though there may not be a lot of choice in the area, there is that capacity for comparison.
Well, and I think in the area of medical care, it goes beyond what you can do in a school district, because a rural clinic, the providers in a rural clinic, they're going to have better information about the quality and costs of specialists. And they'll be able to do a better job of deciding what specialists they want to partner with. And because we will not be tied to an office visit in this bill in terms of payment any longer, they can do e-consults, they can do phone consults, they can, you know, they don't need to have the specialist right next door to them in order to be able to use a specialist's skills in helping them provide better care to their patients. And we would expect that whoever a primary care clinic would choose to be in a relationship with in terms of specialists, that there would be a lot better continuity between that specialist and that clinic than there has been in the past. You know, a lot of times it's like they get referred back to the primary care clinic and then the specialist forgets about them. They're all done and they come back to the primary care clinic and the primary care clinic doesn't even necessarily have all the information as to what the specialist did or what the specialist thinks needs to continue to happen. And so there's a lot of breakdowns in the system. In the future, I just think that'll be improved tremendously because there'll be choices on the part of the physicians who they partner with as well, and they'll all be aiming themselves at the same goals here of keeping people healthy, having lower costs, having higher quality.
I'm just waiting for the fiscal notes here. I'm trying to break out of paradigms of thinking that I think my head is stuck in from the old systems.
It's easy for that to happen.
You know, I just keep going back and trying to understand it within a paradigm that I already have stuck in my head. So how does the insurance policy fit into this? Now that my clinic has established my team and my partnerships, and I've sort of talked about my price, which I'm making transparent, and I'll treat everybody who comes through my door for the same price, for the same service. How do I, as a individual who's bought an insurance coverage play into to this particular clinic that I go to in Mankato? How does that play against each other? Since the price is being set now really at the provider level.
Right. The insurance company will still be responsible for making payments to your provider, and that would include any catastrophic incidences that might happen where they would be drawing out of reserves to make payments to your provider, so your provider's not assuming that risk.
So, but the, excuse me, Senator Brigland, so if my I choose my provider in Mankato and they've set certain costs, my insurance company, because I've chosen them, and maybe I don't get to choose them because it's the only one, but that's mine. Now, the provider of the insurance policy is going to set my costs based on who I've chosen as a provider?
The payment would be based on the price that the provider has given. But then let's just say your provider is really good and they're able to, you know, reduce the number of MRIs, they're reducing hospitalizations. So the price they set is really higher than their costs. So they'll be getting extra money. Under the old system, they'd be getting paid for exactly what they did and not rewarded for their efficiency. This system would reward them for their efficiency. So the other thing that the insurance companies would be doing is still designing products. So there'd be still different kinds of insurance policies. And so if your clinic, let's just say your clinic isn't a very efficient clinic, it's a high-cost, inefficient clinic, they would be structuring the policy in such a way that you would have higher out-of-pocket costs so that you're encouraged to look to see if you can find a more efficient provider. But if you don't want to change providers, you don't have to. You would just have a higher individual cost. The insurance companies would be doing the assessments to determine health risk and passing that information on to the medical home that's been selected. I'm sure there's things I'm forgetting that the insurance companies would still do. I don't know where Mr. Lights had done a whole little paper on it. I'm only remembering some of it, I'm sure.
For those of you that are coming into the room now, we're having some opportunity to ask questions and some discussion about Senator Berglund's Bill 3099, and I'm asking the questions, but I'm happy to stop that and take other people's questions, so you might have to poke me because I don't see you over here. So, okay. Senator Laurie?
No, I'm just poking you, that's all.
Some of the insurer persons who are selling products have contacted me by email, and I'm sure others as well, and concerns about how this changes the role of the person that is selling the insurance product. Can you talk a little bit about that? Some concern that they'd like to see the negotiations stay within the insurance company, for example, or how exactly when I'm talking to those who sell
agents,
insurance, and these are agents,
yeah,
or people who
the
own agencies.
Agents are concerned about the exchange. You know, they see it as a possible way people would be buying insurance without the assistance of an agent. But if they sell a policy to an individual who would be purchasing a policy now through a 125 benefit, they would be paid a commission through the exchange. And the way I always looked at it is the more customers you potentially have, the better off you are if you're trying to sell something. And this 125 benefit is going to make insurance more affordable for a lot of people who don't have employer insurance today and work for small employers. And so we're going to have, you know, like a new pool of 9,000 or more people that are looking to buy insurance. And, you know, these people have to go out and make contacts with them, but it seems to me that they shouldn't be so afraid of it. We can't get the 125 benefit to people without having this insurance exchange, because these old companies that aren't offering insurance at all, they're not going to be offering, you know, they're not going to be willing to administer their own 125 benefit. And it's just too complicated for them to, you know, be trying to figure out how to do all of this without having a place that does it for them. But it will create a lot more people who will be purchasing private insurance, and so give the agents a lot more opportunity to sell to more people.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just some information also put out by the department that came out of the Transformation Task Force concerning the cost of employer health insurance and the rise. It's from 2002, it was roughly under $5,000 for employer health insurance. And in 2007, it's just roughly under $8,000. That's a 68% growth from 2000 to 2006. And so this is an opportunity to provide these employers to give their employees health insurance. And also with all this, too, we're trying to make the consumer more aware and be responsible for the product that they're buying. And competition is not bad. Competition is good. And that's what we're trying to develop also in this, more of a market-based. And so the whole purpose is for people to do some cost comparing and do some research, whether they do it with the insurance broker or they do it on their own, but to start asking more questions. And that is, as you say, not in your way of thinking, but it's we need to be people to be more cost conscious and aware of their health and the products they're buying and just the general direction they want to go with their health insurance.
I think we probably have a spreadsheet we could go through.
Okay. So would
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, members, I believe it's being copied right now. And so as soon as the page gets back, we'll be able to go through it.
Amendments, then?
Madam Chair, members, I think there are amendments, but they're being copied as well.
Okay, so then we'll continue our conversation. Is there anybody else that has a question? All right, now I'm a consumer, and I'm going to go and I'm going to get on this computerized exchange where I can look up and I can see, as a result of getting online and looking at this, the various providers and what they're going to be provide for certain costs. It's in this exchange, this
would be comparing policies. So they would group policies based on similar benefits, and then you compare the prices. And again, this will cause some competition so that hopefully we get more prices that are lower.
Right, but I still have to buy a policy.
Yes.
And that's where the agent still is in play, is that I have to have somebody to...
You don't have to. I mean, you can go on the internet today and buy
the
auto insurance without an agent. You can, you know, buy health insurance without an agent. This would just be a place where you did that, but you would have, you know, more apples to apples comparisons in terms of comparing prices. And you could put into the system, you know, I want a policy that will do X, Y, and Z. And then they'd be able to show you policies that would meet that criteria instead of you having to try and figure that all out by yourself.
And these policies in the exchange will have a basic set of services that all of those policies will need to include in their package.
No. We don't expect that there will be a million policies offered on this, because that would just get so confusing for people. But we don't want to limit it so much, because small employers will be able to use the exchange to administer their 125 benefit even if they are providing insurance, if they choose to. And so we want enough flexibility in the types of policies available so that they feel they have the type of policy available that they want to offer their employees. In the individual market, you'll be choosing, and you'll be choosing from, you know, a very high level of benefits to a more medium level of benefits to a lower level of benefits. And the program will calculate for you, based on information you provide, what the benefit will be of the 125, so that you'll know what your after-tax cost is. And then you can, I would think many people might choose a higher quality policy than they would otherwise, because they would have more money they could invest in it.
Well, Senator Berglund, the paradigm that I'm thinking out of here is that if I purchase a policy, will I be able to purchase a policy that doesn't have coverage for obstetrics or for mental health services or for chemical dependency services? Or will there be a basic set of expectations that we require in a health insurance?
The bill has a requirement that the policies provide a certain benefit. Now, when we are having the basic benefit value, the benefit value organization coming up with a benefit set, that will be done in a way where not every service would be covered, only every service would be covered, but there would be much less cost sharing on services that have been found to be beneficial. So, you know, based on scientific evidence, there, generally speaking, is more than one option for a treatment regime, and they would be looking at the better outcomes. And so instead of just having these huge deductibles, if you're diabetic, you know, we don't need to have a big deductible on your insulin, because we know that needs to be provided, and those kind of barriers sometimes mean people are not getting things that they really do need to have. In other cases, you know, if there are choices and the cost sharing is greater for one thing over another thing, then you look at it a little more closely to decide what you want to do.
The background of one of my questions is that another of these questions that gets asked of me is, or bills that people have asked us to carry are bills that allow an employer to provide a policy that excludes such things as mental health services or obstetrical services or something in order to get the rates down.
We are not changing the law in regard to what policies have to have. But there is, you know, there's a variety of things out there today, and we're not reining that all in and saying everybody has to have one kind of policy.
Yeah. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Berglund, along the same line that Senator Sharon was talking about, I think that's some of the concerns we've heard too, is that as Minnesota is trying to get to universal health care and universal coverage, this does not require a comprehensive benefit set. And we could wind up offering the public a whole variety of little packages, again, similar to the confusing array of pharmaceutical choices they have with Medicare Part D. And when you're, again, shopping for the best thing for you and your family, you wind up having something in this policy provides, and something's here and something's here. You know, all necessary care is not covered. And comprehensive benefit sets are not part of the solution. So I think that's where there's a lot of concern.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Ropes, I understand that. On the other hand, we're not in a position just to replace all the premiums that small employers pay on behalf of their employees. So the way that we're approaching this is the affordability standard does not just include premiums, it includes out-of-pocket costs. So if you have an employer that decides, you know, that they want to have a $1,000 deductible, and that's what they're offering their employees through the exchange, we would be able to subsidize that deductible to help make that an affordable policy for a low-wage worker. We can't do that out in the marketplace today. It's pretty hard to figure out how to administer all of that. But when things are being purchased through the exchange, we would know when payments are being made and when somebody is eligible to have a subsidy from the government. And so it would be a way of providing subsidies for lower-wage workers when they have a policy that may not be affordable enough for them.
Of course, when I got home, the dog was...
The benefits are not... You know, usually it's not about whether a benefit's offered. It's about how much is paid for. You know, it's like our dental coverage. I'll use that as an example. We don't have the greatest dental coverage anymore. We have to pay a lot of out-of-pocket costs for our dental coverage, but it isn't like they've said, you know, we won't pay for crowns or anything. I mean, you still get the service. You just have a lot more out-of-pocket costs. And so that's the way the policies are structured, usually higher or lower deductibles, maybe different levels of coinsurance, and through the exchange, we would be able to provide mechanisms to make sure those policies would still be affordable to lower-wage workers.
Are there any other questions? Have we got our materials yet? Are they here? All right. Are there any other further questions at this time?
Madam Chair, I think it'd be good if you asked people not to get up and rush toward our staff to get a copy of the materials, that after they're handed out at the table, that we will bring them out there so they don't hurt anybody.
I think that sounds like a very good suggestion from an experienced chair. So no rushing the table, please. We're going to have this material distributed. Material. Would you summarize the material that's going to be distributed for us?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, you'll be getting two spreadsheets. One is of a summary of the bill by change item, and that's this one. And the other spreadsheet is a one-page sheet of the Healthcare Access Fund and how it's affected by this bill. Madam Chair. Should I begin?
Yes, you may begin. Has everybody got a copy that at the table? Begin.
Madam Chair, members, I'll go through the change item spreadsheet first. This represents all of the spending in the bill with the exception of two items. It also includes spending items which will be introduced in an amendment that will be... I think introduced shortly after this presentation. The two items that aren't included on the spreadsheet are the Section 125 plan costs, and we're currently waiting for the Department of Revenue to complete that item. And then also there was an item that was introduced last night to waive premiums for people who are enrolled in MinnesotaCare but are eligible for MA. And since that was just introduced last night, we don't have the opportunity to – the department couldn't turn that around for this morning. I should also mention before we go on that all of the appropriations in this bill, with the exception of one, are from the Healthcare Access Fund. The other is appropriation, which is from the new Health Improvement Fund, and that's in the Department of Health for the state health-wide program. Just summarizing at the top, you'll see the total change in this bill is represented by is $38 million in fiscal year 09, $107 million in 10, 150 $6 million and $11 million, for a total of $263 in the next biennium, and that's from the Healthcare Access Fund. Also, what's not shown on here is the health improvement spending from the Health Improvement Fund. And the reason that's not shown here is because there's an offsetting revenue, and this page just calculates the total change. And since it's basically a budget-neutral item, it doesn't show up on this page, but there would be an appropriation in the bill for $20 million in 2009 and then $40 million in 10 and 11 for a total of $80 million in next biennium.
And the Health Improvement Fund is the new fund that's being formed that we were talking about last night in the bill.
That's correct. That's the fund that is paid for, I believe, by the assessments to the hospitals and the health plans.
That's great.
Next, you'll just see in that box there, it's a summary of the Healthcare Access Fund balance. We won't go over that now. We'll wait till we get to the other spreadsheet. And then you'll see by department the spending. And really, there's only spending in the two department, bigger departments in our jurisdiction, DHS and the Department of Health. And then we'll go through, beginning on page 2, the change items.
I don't have a page 2.
Oh.
Whatever we're looking at, I didn't get a copy of it up here.
You're looking at the healthcare access.
She just doesn't. Matter, she so. Just has the healthcare access. Madam Chair, beginning on line 78, this item is a $159,000 appropriation in 2009 for application and renewal automation. This is the idea of trying to link the different programs out there with the healthcare eligibility systems. And it's a one-time spending item, really, because it ends after fiscal year 10. And these are basically just administrative costs associated with doing that effort. The next on line 90.
Madam Chair, I might just add that since this has been successfully done in several other states, we would expect that the Department of Human Services would be able to figure out how to administer this properly.
Thank you, Senator Bergen.
Madam Chair, members, beginning then on line 91 is an item for Minnesota Care 1 month rolling eligibility. It would be effective in fiscal year 10. There is some cost in fiscal year 09 with the startup, administrative startup, but the cost for 10 and 11 is $9.2 million. On line 99 is an item for Minnesota Care delayed verification, again with small startup costs in 2009 and a cost in the next biennium of $1.9 million. Turning to page 3, line 108 is an item to raise the Minnesota Care inpatient cap from $10,000 to $20,000, and the initial cost in 2009 is $3.1 million. In the next biennium, it's $19.7 million. On line 115 is an item to increase eligibility for Minnesota Care families with children. This item also includes the premium reduction that's called for in the bill and the repeal of the $50,000 income limit. And that's effective in fiscal year 10. There's some small administrative costs in 2009. And then the total in the next biennium is $15.3 million. And line 124 is a similar item, Minnesota Care Adults Without Children eligibility raised to 300% of poverty with a premium reduction. And that costs in 10 and 11, $16.8 million. On line 133 is the Minnesota Care Premium Grace Month. Small administrative costs in 2009. It becomes effective in fiscal year 10 for a total biennial cost of $19.2 million. On line 140 is the elimination of the Minnesota Care four-month barrier with a cost of $56.9 million in the next biennium. Beginning on 148 is a new item that will be addressed in the amendment shortly. This is in the bill. I'm sorry. I'm getting confused. This is the waive the first-month premium for Minnesota Care and was almost $300,000 of cost in 2009. And then when it's implemented in 10, the biennial cost is $13.9 million. Next, on line 157, is the Minnesota Care Outreach Incentive Funding. This is to add to the payment, and I mean the application incentives that are currently out there. The cost for this is $7.8 million in the next biennium. On line 165 is a small amount of one-time money in fiscal year 09 of $46,000 to help the department for some of the work it has to do with the insurance exchange and how it relates to the Minnesota healthcare programs.
Just a moment, please. I wonder if there are any questions. I heard you reacting. Do you want to ask the question out loud? Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Next, members, beginning on line 171 is the long-term care work insurance, long-term care workers insurance study, for a cost in 09 of $422,000. That's a one-time cost. On line 178 is rural underserved areas physician rate increase, with $100,000 in fiscal year 09, and then going to $200,000 annually in 10 and 11, and this essentially represents a doubling of the general fund amount, or represents the equivalent amount of money that currently is available in the Minnesota Department of Health's loan forgiveness program.
And this would create 13 new rural positions for that would sort of mirror the loan forgiveness program, only it would be done through a rate increase so that we can generate the federal dollars to help us make this go further.
Madam Chair, members, beginning again on line 178, this item is an appropriation to provide people with employer-sponsored insurance subsidies if they are eligible for Minnesota Care. This item begins in fiscal year 09 with a study on how to actually implement such a program, and then provides money in 10 and 11 for the actual subsidies for a total of $70 million in 10 and 11. Next, on line 186 is a this will be part of the amendment being introduced. This is comes from Senator Sharon's bill, Senate File 2631. It's an appropriation for the Open Door Health Center of $350,000 in fiscal year 09, and it's one time. Next, on line 192 is a appropriation for a program called Molar Express. It's a mobile dental unit, and I believe this is from a bill that's just recently been introduced by Senator Berglund, and it's $500,000 of one-time money in fiscal year 09. Next, on line 198, this is also in the amendment, is to eliminate the sunset for the waiver of Minnesota Care premiums for military members and their families. And that was supposed to sunset in fiscal year 11. And so the cost in that year is $1.7 million. And then finally, the last DHS item on line 206 is to eliminate the Minnesota Care add-back of depreciation for farmers effective July 1st, 2008. The issue here is that originally this was supposed to be implemented in fiscal year 09, but because of there's been some delays getting the waiver approved for this item, it's really not expected to be implemented to fiscal year 10. So what we're doing here is actually providing the federal share of the money for this initiative in fiscal year 09. So for the first year, it'll be all state funds, but then with the hope of trying, and I think the expectation that once the waiver is approved, that the federal government will give us the money retroactively to when we began this part of the program. Next, going to the Department of Health, first item is on line 216. It's a $12 million one-time appropriation in 09 to establish the Health Transformation Commission. On line 22 is a one-time appropriation of $8 million to establish the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. Line 228 begins the statewide health improvement program. For $20 million in $20 million in fiscal year 09, $40 million in 11, and the
Madam Chair, if I can just interrupt
Senator
here.
Berglund.
Department of Health has some ideas about how to bring down the cost of this program, but we haven't had a chance to discuss that with them. This is the training for the medical homes and certifying the medical homes. And apparently they've had a federal grant to do that for the primary care pilot program that has
Madam Chair? I'm sorry, Senator Berlin?
Yes.
That's a different item.
Oh, I'm
coming
sorry.
Up. But just to go through this one here, you'll see in the first, I think, 7 or 8 lines, these are administrative costs that the department is requesting for the implementation of this. It includes on line 230 10 FTEs for a cost of $848,000 in fiscal year 10 and ongoing operating costs.
Statewide Health Improvement Program.
Right. This is the public health program.
Right.
Public health initiative.
They also have an evaluation contractor, behavioral risk factors system. This is a computer system that they'd like to implement. Line 234 is the cost for the BMI surveillance system. Turning to the next page, line 235, this is a transfer to MD, Department of Education, for some activity they're expected to do. And then a small administrative services amount there for other non-personnel costs. And then on line 237 is the grant amounts that will be going out to the different local public health initiatives, and that's $18.6 million in 09, $37.2 million in 10, and the same amount in 11, for a total of $74.4 in 10 and 11. Next on line 241 is the healthcare homes item, which Senator Berglund was just referencing. And this is to help coordinate the establishment of medical homes across the state, and it's $2.2 million in 09 and just over $5 million in 10 and 11. Next on line 248 is...
If I can just interject this also.
Senator Berglund.
I would expect this cost would go down over time because when we have physicians in their residency programs in the future, they should be learning how to be a part of a medical home and not need to, we would not need to continue to keep training people in this at the same level that we will at the beginning.
Senator Lurie?
The FTEs seem to be one of the biggest cost drivers there. Would those also decrease over time? I do see the technical and support systems decreasing between 9 and 11.
Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, yes. This is really needed to get this going quicker.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, members, the next line on 248 is an appropriation of money to the Department of Health's e-health records grant and loan program initiatives. This is basically split. It's each year between the grant program and the revolving loan fund. This is a continuation of an effort that was passed, I believe, in last year, and adds $4 million in 09, a little over $4 million in 10 and 11. In fiscal year 11, it continues the program that was scheduled to sunset in 10 into fiscal year 11 at a cost of $11.4 million. And then is sunsetted after that year. And this essentially brings the program's funding level up to the governor's original request last year. And
we
then add
that, Madam Chair, we think Senator there'll Berglund. Be more requests coming in because from the small rural providers because of features in the bill that are requiring them in order to do business with the state to have e-health records. And this, there was a little bit of concern expressed by the Office of Rural Health about some of the small providers being able to meet this requirement. So if we have more loan and grant money available, then they'll be able to be covered in terms of their requests.
Thank you, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, members, the next item is on line 255. This is an item that's also included in the amendment that will be forthcoming, and it's an item taken from a Senator Dahl bill, Senate File 3122, the Dental Scholarship Program for the Department of Health. And this appropriates $400,000 each year for that program. And then finally, on line 262 is an increase in the FQHC subsidies that were passed last session. And this provides an additional $4 million each year and puts the funding level at the position that the Senate had going into conference committee last year.
Madam Chair, we just feel like since we have to generate savings in order to really go all the way with expanding the affordability that we need to support our community clinics that are bearing the burden of the increased number of uninsured until we get people, until we get down the road toward universal coverage here more fully.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members, just one last thing. Just turn your attention to the one-page handout of the Healthcare Access Fund. This just goes through the fund. I know the type is really small, but this just lists all the different initiatives in the bill that affect the Healthcare Access Fund and its impact on the fund balance. And I just point your attention to two lines here. One is the very last one, which is line 77, balance after transfer line. And this just shows you what the balance is in the fund through fiscal year 11. And you'll see that at the end of that time, it's at a zero balance. However, on line 75, you'll see an item called Health Transformation Reserve. And this is essentially the balance that's left in the fund after all these items are paid for. But the bill puts the money into a reserve, I mean, this $85.1 million into a reserve in order to guard the buffer the fund from any unforeseen forecast changes that might take place as a result of some of these initiatives. So, for instance, if we have greater take-up on some of these things than maybe originally forecasted, this money would be there to keep the fund in good shape into the next third biennium.
And the other reason is because normally we have more than 2 years of growth when we make program change. Usually it's 3 to 4 years to mature. And so we need to make sure on the columns that we don't see on this spreadsheet that we're going to be able to afford them.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I'd just like to comment on line 228. That's the statewide health improvement program. And members, I just want to call our attention to one of the items in our packet is a March 3rd, 2008 memo from Health Partners, Allina, and Park Nicolet. And in that document, it's quoted, and they say, no single improvement has greater potential to improve the health of all Minnesotans and reduce the demand for health care services, and they're speaking to public health. And I point this out because clearly this is the largest component. This is where the dollars are being spent in this reform bill. And while the dollar figure certainly strikes us all as large and sticks out, I'm pleased to see that that's where we are choosing to expend the majority of our resources.
Madam Chair,
thank you. Senator Berglund.
It really is impossible to have grants going to all the communities in the state unless you have a fairly large fund to make the grants out of.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, in fact, I might suggest that while that number appears to be large, frankly, I have concerns that it's not large enough.
Thank you, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, this is what we've agreed to, and it's certainly a good place to start. And if we see this as successful, we will have an opportunity to come back and look at funding and out of the savings fund that we're creating in the future at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions?
I would move adoption of this spreadsheet.
We move adoption of the spreadsheet. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, it passes.
I think we have amendments.
We have some amendments. Sarah, would you please distribute the amendments, please? While the amendments are being distributed, Senator Berglund, on the distribution of the money for the health programs, that's divided into three phases. The first phase is sort of doing the assessment and getting the basic data. And the second phase is more designing and the plan and then the implementation. As I understood the distribution of these dollars, the initial phase of that community planning program was reimbursed at some kind of a base rate, and then the second phase is a per person, per population number. Is that your understanding?
I think so, maybe, yeah.
So is every community given the same amount of money to do the initial phase, or is that, how is
some
that?
Some people are already receiving money through a federal grant.
And some already have the data.
So some would be ahead of others. But, yes. Mr. Lights.
Madam Chair, that is correct. There would be a base amount that would be allocated to all communities to do the initial planning phase. And then as it phases in, there's also a per capita amount that is added that's based on population in the communities as they phase through the system.
Thank you, Mr. Lights. Senator Prettner-Solem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But Senator Berglund, I'm assuming the governor supports this proposal, the health care proposal.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, the governor supports the framework. We have not obviously agreed on exactly the level of expenditures that should happen out of the Health Care Access Fund in order to improve access for people that are already insured in our programs. And obviously that will need to be a continuing discussion.
So, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solem.
Senator Berglund, it looks like that this proposal, which I support, will pretty much eat up the Health Care Access Fund. And
Madam Chair, and Senator Prettner-Solem, yes, we are using the money for the purposes it was intended.
And I'm just...
Senator Prettner-Solem?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the governor has, I think, requested a transfer of $398 million from the Health Care Access Fund for the budget correction, and that is going to leave a large hole. I'm not sure how, not that I support taking money out of the Health Care Access Fund to go into the general fund, but I know that that is going to leave a burden also.
Senator Berglund, did you want to?
Madam Chair, maybe somebody would like to amend the spreadsheet, but it won't be me.
Well, it won't be me either.
All right, then let's continue to spend the money the way it was intended to be spent.
Is there any further discussion? Is there another amendment that you'd like to introduce, Senator Bergman?
Yes, I have an A-29 amendment, and, I'm just seeing these for the first time as you are, and, our staff's been doing a yeoman's job. They were here late last night and early this morning, so I'll just let Katie explain the amendment.
Madam Chair, this amendment incorporates the spreadsheet that Dave just went through, and just quickly, it includes Senate File 3122 with the dental loan forgiveness and scholarship program. On page 2, lines 15 through 19, this deletes the delayed verification and the rolling eligibility for medical assistance and GAMC that was in the bill. In the bottom of line, or page 2, in the top of page 3, this removes the sunset for eliminating the premiums for the military families in Minnesota Care. And then page 3, lines 6 and 7, that makes the self-employed farmer language in Minnesota Care, that adding back the depreciation, effective July 1 of 08. And then the rest of page 3 is the mobile dental unit program that Dave talked about. I think it was Molar Express. And then, let's see. Then we, in the bottom of page 3, we have the appropriations for the Open Door Health Center and the federally qualified health centers, and on the last page, then we have the appropriations for the electronic health records loan program and grant program.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Madam Chair, I have one question. There is a elimination of a sunset for the program that. Would you review that? The sunset is for which
military
program?
Premium.
Military premium.
Yeah,
people. Co-pays.
People coming back from the war are currently offered Minnesota Care if they're eligible, without premiums for the first year. And when we originally initiated that program, we sunsetted it because we thought maybe they might not still be coming back from the war, but they are still coming back from the war, so we're going to lift that sunset and allow that program to continue for a while longer.
Madam Chair, there's not a need for establishing a different sunset at this, do you think, or do you think that this will go away simply because the war eventually will go away?
We Thank hope.
You. Yes. Yes, we do. All right. Any other questions? Would you like to move?
I did.
The 829 amendment has been moved. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Are there any further amendments?
Katie, do we have some more appropriation amendments? Okay.
Katie, is that page 3?
Are there any other questions?
Are there no other questions? Then
I would move that Senate File 3099 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? It passes.
Thank you, members.
Thank you very,
very
much,
much,
Senator Berglund. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 19th. Thank you.
Senator.
Yes, I have the A30 amendment.
Oh.
We passed it. We passed the bill.
Well, we can reconsider.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
We did ask, and nobody seemed to have anything, so we thought with the amendments.
Oh, I'm sorry. We asked if there were other amendments just a few moments ago. Sorry.
So I would move that the vote by which we pass Senate File 3099 be now reconsidered.
This is a motion to reconsider. Does that require a vote?
Yes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, thank you, members. I apologize for stepping out for clarification on this amendment. This amendment deals with the community benefit for hospitals. I'm extremely concerned about hospitals, especially rural hospitals. I've heard from my local folks back home. I've been in discussion with the Hospital Association. They're very worried about the 2% provider tax that's going to be assessed to them to fund the health improvement fund. And actually, Senator Berglund, we're going back to your original bill. I think you had a great idea in your original bill. And I understand the whole process of compromise, but this is a much better idea, and I feel like I just need to put this idea back on the table. The Healthcare Access Commission, and actually the Governor's Transformation Task Force, if I understand correctly, came up with the same recommendation. Is that correct, Senator Berglund? Mm-hmm. So I would like to go back to that original plan that came from the Governor's Transformation Task Force and the Healthcare Access Fund on the revenue stream for creating the Health Improvement Fund. So you see before you Amendment 30, and this returns the funding to a more appropriate source. This legislature and the state has for many years connected the dots between unhealthy behavior choices, for example, smoking, and the natural health consequences of using tobacco. Unfortunately, a few years ago, there was an unwise decision, I think, to deplete the tobacco settlement fund, and that money is not available to us. Or that might be a real appropriate use of that fund to get the health care improvement fund up and running. Since that's gone, I would propose that we go back to a fee that will be imposed on the sale of cigarettes in this state. This is the original language from Senator Berglund's original bill and the original language from the governor's task force. Right now, the hospitals each will be assessed a 2% tax, and I can tell you that in Winona, the community benefit has always been used, and as many hospitals, for the benefit of the community. And many of the hospitals are engaged in partnerships back in our hometowns that are helping to improve the community's health and welfare back home. And if we ask them to pull back some of that revenue that they already have committed to community benefit and redirect it to the Health Improvement Fund, that is going to leave a lot of gaps back in our regions and our hometowns. And this summer when we had the floods in southeastern Minnesota, Winona Community Hospital contributed over $250,000 to flood relief efforts in the region. And this is a perfect example of if they had not done that, if they had not had the ability to extend this sort of benefit to our region, it's a perfect example of what Senator Sharon was talking about the other day with cost shifting. If the hospital had not been able to support $250,000 worth of flood relief efforts back home, those needs would be unmet, and we would have to be paying for them through public programs and public support out of another pot of money up here at the Capitol. So that's a perfect example of how cost shifting is going to occur if we do this pullback. So that's if the hospitals withdraw from their community benefits at home. I think most of them will continue the good work that they do in our communities and simply add a 2% flow-through tax to comply with this law. So either way they do it, it's not going to be good. And I'm very concerned about our hometown hospitals, our rural hospitals.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I have to speak against this amendment. And I guess I can be really quite honest and say the funding mechanism for this in the bill is not my first choice. But we need to remember that we want to have this public health improvement fund created. And the governor's been pretty clear that he would veto this, and we would have no public health improvement fund then. And so I hope most of you would agree with me that having the fund is more important than having the perfect source of funding for it. In addition to that, this amendment is really the purview of the tax committee. And I don't want to have to take this bill back to the tax committee after the finance committee sees it. The bill has already been there, and that was a long enough 3.5 hours for me. So I would urge you to defeat this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson-Ropes, I agree with Senator Berglund, and I agree with you. This would be my preference also. I don't think it's going to happen, and I think that it is important that we preserve the body of the bill and the health improvement program. And so I would ask that you withdraw your amendment.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson Ropes, I agree. My first preference was to increase the tobacco tax, but the reality is it will get vetoed. And I think it's important to point out that there is an expiration on this of 2013. And perhaps there is some comfort language we can put in for the hospitals to say we're not asking for any more than what you contribute.
We did add that language.
Oh, it's already added. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Senator Berglund. But we're just asking for a portion of this to be used for preventive measures. And after 2013, it goes back to the normal. But it is agreement that we need to move forward with.
Well, Madam Chair and committee members, we are always faced with tough decisions. And as you heard me say the other day, I would love to support certain pieces of this bill, and I can't. So then we're left with a tough decision about to vote for it or against it. I think you find yourselves in that same position today. I really believe, and I've said this when I was on the school board as well, sometimes how you do something is as important as what it is you do. And this is a mechanism, I think, that we really need to look at. This has been the result of all the summer studies and the interim work from two study groups. I think it's really important. I understand the political part of that, but I have the amendment before you.
Thank you, Senator Erickson Rose. Is there any other comment? I think that I'd like to check the numbers that Senator Erickson Rose is referring to. I think those were changed in an amendment last evening that we approved, that it was 0.015 and then 0.3.
Yes.
So it's not quite the number that originally was in the original bill. So there has been a change in terms of that.
Madam Chair, and the reason that it's at that rate is because the Medicare and Medicaid revenues from the hospitals are exempted. So if you have a high Medicaid, Medicare hospital, they won't be paying it on that revenue. But that means the smaller base has to have a little higher percentage.
And Senator Berglund, on the money that's collected from the hospitals, if they're counting free care or uncollected or uncompensated dollars as a part of that, is it possible that that's a part of the number that they're utilizing to talk about community dollars and community care that's not real dollars that have come in but are services?
There's nothing in this that says that they would stop providing uncompensated care.
But this percentage is applied against a number that they're giving as dollars that are committed to community.
No, it's on the revenues they bring in.
It's on the revenue. That's the question. Okay, right. Thank you very much. Okay, I'd just like to say for myself as well on the record that I understand what Senator Erickson Robes is talking about. I really believe in the public health program. I believe in that the movement of that. I don't know what's going to happen with this bill, but I do think there's a great deal of popularity for this portion of the bill because we all really believe that the prevention programs have the best long-term impact on the cost of health care. So I feel that the amendment places us in a position where it appears that we're voting against an amendment that we believe is a better source of funding for this program. And it leaves us looking like we disagree with that as a result of the amendment. But in order to advance what I think is just an incredibly critical component of this reform proposal, I'll be voting against the amendment as well. Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard? All those, it's been moved. So all of those in favor of the A30 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion fails.
And are there any other amendments? If there are not, then I would renew my motion that Senate File 3099 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the full Finance Committee.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes.
Thank you very much, members.
Senator Sharon.